Coming up next, another episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. Welcome back to another episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. I just got done watching the Nuggets get walloped 126-114 by the Cavaliers. One thing's become very clear watching Denver this season. The Nuggets are no longer finals contenders. It's sad to say because Jokic is playing the best basketball of his entire life. He has been extraordinary nearly every single night he's played this entire season. He is better than he's ever been. The issue with Denver is everything else around him. And you have Nuggets Nation right now pointing fingers, rightfully playing the blame game. Some people looking at Calvin Booth, their general manager, investing in young players, those young players, Julian Strother not meeting expectations, Zeke Nagy getting a contract, plays three of the worst minutes I have seen any individual player play all season long, tight end against the Cavaliers. The young guys have not gotten better, except for Christian Brown. Some people pointing the finger at Michael Malone. You see him going against Kenny Atkinson. Atkinson has all these different layers to their offense, on-ball movement, off-ball movement. It's gorgeous watching all these pieces interconnect, whereas Denver, it feels like they don't have many layers. They have the Jokic two-man game. They have give the ball to Jokic and watch him do magic, but they don't have a lot else. You can look at those factors, the GM and the coach. To me, the number one person to blame in Denver for the reason why they are no longer contenders is Jamal Murray. He has not gotten better since they won their championship. He's gotten worse in the years since then. And you think about guys that when they're age 27 years old, this is when players enter their prime historically. Jamal Murray looks like a guy who's on the decline. He just got paid $200 million and you have him against the Cavaliers. He can't even create against some of their worst defenders. He can't generate space in the ways that he did prior. He does not look like he's as speedy as he was in the past. He looks heavier. He looks out of shape. He looks like a guy that doesn't have that same spark that he did in his prime seasons. And that's the biggest bummer of all, because for Jokic, he held up his end of the bargain. He got better after winning MVPs, after winning a finals MVP. And Jamal Murray's gotten worse. He's gotten worse. And that is so disappointing when you think about the player Jokic is. He should be a player where he is one of the favorites in the league. That's what made Giannis and the Bucks such a big story earlier this year. Giannis playing out of his mind, the Bucks weren't playing to his level. They've gotten better. The Nuggets, now they need Jamal Murray to play to Jokic's level. But I don't believe that he has it in him. I don't think he does. I think Murray's lost something and he's entered too many seasons out of shape. He has played himself into shape historically. I don't think he's going to refine it in the middle of the season. Maybe I'll be wrong, but that's the number one thing that needs to happen for Denver. There isn't a move that they can make that can really move the needle. They can't trade a first round pick until 2031 because they're giving up three firsts already in 25 to Orlando, 2 years after that to OKC, and then another 2 years after that to Oklahoma City again. So they don't have their picks. They're locked up there. Those picks are protected. They can't trade a first until 2031. And they don't have young players of great value. Christian Brown, you can't really move him. You can't move Brown unless it's for a clear upgrade. But I don't know if you're getting a clear upgrade without those picks. Strother has no value. Zeke Nagy has no value. He has negative value, if anything, with his money. And other guys like Jalen Pickett have just not worked out. So Denver, what move is there to make? I don't think there is a needle-moving decision that Calvin Booth and that front office can make. Michael Malone with the roster. I mean, look, you got young guys. You have some aging veterans. You're doing your best to make it work. What needs to happen is Jamal Murray needs to return to his prime levels. That's the number one question for Denver. That is one of the biggest questions in the entire league right now. Can Jamal Murray refine himself over the course of the season? And if he doesn't, well, that means one of the greatest seasons we've seen being wasted, because Jokic tonight, 27 points, 20 rebounds, 11 assists, another extraordinary performance, passes Magic Johnson for the most triple doubles all time. And I know, as his teammate Russell Westbrook knows, the triple double king, triple doubles don't necessarily mean anything, but for Jokic, they do mean something with his great all-time level efficiency, with his ability to lead a franchise. And the fact Russ is doing his best off the bench to adapt and bring energy and bring that vibe off the bench, bring that spark, you got to give him credit too. Christian Brown getting better as a young guy, takes KCP's starting job. And guess what? He's doing really well. Michael Porter Jr. still playing just about every single game. Aaron Gordon's back. Everybody's doing their job, except for Jamal Murray. Except for Jamal Murray. And he needs to get better, or this is going to be a lost season for the Nuggets. And that's so disappointing, considering the level of the player that Jokic is. Murray has let Jokic down. Let's move on to my conversation talking about some of the other biggest stories of the week with Tom Haberstroh. And now joins Tom Haberstroh from Yahoo Sports and The Finder. Tom, the biggest thing that happened this week in the NBA, I think it's the Heat beating the Lakers by 41 points on Wednesday night. I mean, just an absolutely ugly game. A big game for both teams. The Heat, they're 10-10 on the season. They had to have something good happen for them. It's the first time all year we've really seen Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, and Tyler Hero all play well. And then for the Lakers, LeBron's going through one of the worst stretches of his career. He has a pretty good game. But then Anthony Davis, AD, goes 3-14 in the game. He's 7-28 over his last two games for 20 total points. JJ Redick after the game says, "I'm embarrassed. We're all embarrassed. I'm taking accountability. I'm taking ownership. I'm the coach." But the players also need to take ownership. I can't physically talk and call out. I can't do this. And by the way, I'm not blaming the players. I own this, but we need the ownership on the court as well. It was a hell of a quote. Blaming the players while also not blaming the players. What was your takeaway from that Lakers Heat game on Wednesday?
I mean, the press conferences from JJ Redick this year, we already had high hopes for these press conferences, and they've only gotten better and better. You know, if you're in an argument with your wife, your partner, whatever it is, and you're like, "Yeah, you don't do this, you don't do this, you don't do this. I'm not blaming you, but you're not doing any of these things. I'm not blaming you." You're going to get it. You're going to be sleeping on the couch. So JJ Redick, I was wondering what he was going to say after this game, because this is the worst two-game stretch in Lakers history in terms of point differential. This was a game in which, like you said, this was a pivotal game for both sides, so the stakes were pretty big, and that was not just embarrassing. Kevin, I have it written down in my notes before the third quarter happened, I have it in my notes, are they shaving points? That's how bad the Lakers were. Is they were so bad defensively and just so disconnected and giving so little effort. I literally was wondering, before Tyler Hero went 7-for-7 on three-pointers in a single quarter, I was wondering if they were shaving points. That's the only way I can describe how pathetic their defense was. Their energy was that I thought they were throwing the game. The things that they were doing, Anthony Davis gambling for whatever reason on a steal, letting Bam Adebayo get a dunk on the backdoor cut dunk. LeBron James for his 20th straight missed three after a 14-0 run by Miami. He points in transition, "Hey, you go get Jimmy Butler," and Jimmy Butler gets a wide open layup. That sentence, by the way, after a 14-0 Miami run, after LeBron James's 20th straight missed three-pointer. Hell of a sentence. But this is all happening where I'm watching, and it seems like they're rebelling against JJ Redick. They're rebelling against the entire Lakers brand. It's the only explanation I can come up with is that they're literally shaving points out there, Kevin.
I mean, I think of all the JJ quotes after the game, the one that you're talking about when it comes to like shaving points, I'm sure, you know, they're not shaving points.
They're not doing that.
But JJ said something after the game where he said, this quote didn't get nearly as much attention as the other one, rightfully so, because the other one was incredible. But he said something along the lines of, "We're having trouble executing base level game plan stuff." And that hits your point, Tom, where it's like, they're just not even rotating. They're not executing switches on defense. They look completely discombobulated on the offensive end of the floor. And this happened time and time again throughout the game, even as early as the first quarter. Miami's on a 12-0 run at early in the first quarter. This is where the first time the game began to unravel for the Lakers. And the Heat ran like a very simple action on the offensive end of the floor. And while the action was happening, Haywood Highsmith kind of sprinted to the corner and a screen was set for him by Jimmy Butler. And both D'Lo and AD followed the ball on the other side of the floor. And you can hear on the Heat broadcast, at least, which is the one I watch, D'Lo yelling at AD something I sounded like he was saying, "That's yours, that's yours." And Highsmith is just wide open for a skip pass for a wide open corner three to get on a 15-0 run in the middle of the first quarter. And that just happened every single quarter. All the time. And that's JJ's point about we're not executing basic stuff.
Yeah, and there are other times where they're pointing fingers. There's no communication. He talked about that too, is just they're not talking. So much of it is it's LeBron. Okay, so much of it is LeBron. It's just they are conserving his energy to such an extent. There was one play where LeBron was, I think it was Highsmith. He was guarding Highsmith, who was in the left corner, and he did a back cut behind LeBron. And then I think it was Jimmy Butler or someone hit a three-pointer in the left corner when LeBron just fell asleep defensively, and they got a wide open look. And I remember thinking to myself, that's not what LeBron does. Like, that's not LeBron. He has such high IQ that he doesn't just fall asleep defensively, but he did something, KOC, that is one of my favorite things about LeBron is, when he misses a shot so badly, he wipes his hand on his jersey.
I'm sweaty.
Sometimes this is like a nervous tic that he does. Sometimes he does that after a defensive miscue. Like if he falls asleep defensively, or if he loses a guy, or if he doubles and he knows he wasn't supposed to double, he starts wiping his jersey. It's like he does it so much offensively, it's now translated to the defensive end where he's like, "Oh, my hand was slippery." And you're like, "No, you just fell asleep defensively." And so many times in that game, I was like, "Oh, he did the jersey swipe thing because he totally screwed up." And the low energy is something that they're trying to mask defensively. Is like, we know LeBron James only has like 10 bursts left in every game. And most of those bursts are on the offensive end. And he had a pretty good offensive night. But so many of those bursts can't be done defensively. So they're having to over-rotate. They're trying to double. And I have this stat here that pretty much symbolizes or summarizes this inactivity by LeBron James. Jimmy Butler and LeBron both played 29 minutes in the game. Jimmy Butler didn't just have 100 more feet covered than LeBron James in that 29 minutes. He didn't have more than 200, not 300, not 400 more feet covered, not 500, not 600 more feet covered, not 700, not 800, not 900, not 1,000, but 1,100 feet. God.
I thought you were more, about to say over 9,000. It's a Dragon Ball Z reference if you don't get it. What? 9,000?
After this entire game, KOC, LeBron James didn't cover 1,147 more feet than Jimmy Butler. And that's, to me, indicative of a player that knows I only got so much I can do out there. I don't have that much energy. And we heard it from J.J. Redick the other night. He's like, I'm not even sure LeBron should be playing in every game at this point, or trying to play on all the 82 games. There is no accountability in this entire situation. And a lot of it does stem from LeBron's turning 40, and maybe everyone's just afraid to talk about this.
Sure. I mean, look, he's about to turn 40 in just a few weeks. And then his superstar teammate, Anthony Davis, dealing with possibly plantar fasciitis. He does not look the same defensively. You mentioned the play where Bam Adebayo blows by him. So many defensive lapses mentally. I wonder if physically maybe things are wearing on him. But the fact is that even if there is a foot issue there, I don't necessarily think this should be affecting him the way in which that it is on both ends of the floor. With the mental aspect for a guy who fancies himself as a guy who's been screwed as a defensive player of the year guy, but also as an offensive engine. I mentioned earlier how he was 3-for-14 on Wednesday against the Heat, now 7-of-28 in his last two games for only 20 total points. Ever since that missed free throw against the Magic AD's averaging 18 points per game on 16 shots per game on 15% from three, 43% from the field, from the two-point range. So he has completely fallen apart ever since Franz Wagner hit that three, ever since he missed those clutch free throws and the clutch jumper down the stretch. So for AD, I wonder if there's a mental component here with what happened in that game. I wonder if also perhaps after that stretch where he was just dominating on defense, dominating on the offensive end of the floor, because prior to that, he was averaging 31 points per game on 19 shots per game, 59% from two, 43% from three. I wonder if there's a fatigue aspect with Anthony Davis as well, where it's like sometimes in the NFL, a defensive line is just going hard the entire first half, getting penetration, tackling the running back in the backfield, constant pressure on the quarterback. And then in the second half, the offensive line is moving forward every single possession, and the defensive line is doing nothing because they wore themselves out early. And for Anthony Davis, he's always been a number two, sometimes a 1B, but there's a reason why he's never been the best player on a title team. There's a reason why he's never been the defensive player of the year. It's because a lot of the times he just runs out of gas and goes through these stretches. And I wonder if that's what we're seeing here on top of what may or may not be affecting him with plantar fasciitis. But this speaks to a greater point, Tom. JJ, you just said it. JJ says, well, maybe LeBron at almost 40 shouldn't be playing every game. AD, maybe dealing with fatigue, maybe dealing with plantar fasciitis. Maybe he shouldn't be playing every game. But these guys have to play every game when you're in the Western Conference.
That's it right there, is they don't have another guy. And Austin Reeves missing the game on Wednesday night. And they look disconnected. And I don't think this is a case of Austin Reeves would solve all their problems. But it is notable that after this game, you're like, who is their number three? Like, it can't be D'Angelo Russell. Like, it can't be. So many times, I mean, D'Angelo Russell had a three-second call there in the first half where he wasn't even 2.9-ing. It was, he just stood there in the paint for seven seconds. And the referee was like, dude, I got to call this at some point. And he was called for a defensive 3 seconds and nobody talked to him. Nobody. And it wasn't like a Jared Allen thing where he's like, yeah, I did it. 3 seconds. That's right. And there was nothing. It was, this team was so disenthused with everything. There was no energy whatsoever. And D'Angelo Russell just, there's so many decisions that you're just looking at that being like, JJ has got to be losing his mind over having this being their third best player. He's on an expiring contract. They have two first round picks that they can throw into a deal. But this is the problem when you're playing bad, is who wants all those damaged goods there on the Lakers roster? Rui Hachimura was so bad defensively for long stretches in this game. He was another guy that I was like, what are you doing out there? Look, Anthony Davis, to get back to him. Anthony Davis has had 353 games with at least 30 minutes played over his last eight seasons. His game score, which is a one-game metric that combines all your box score stats, right? His game score ranked 352nd among 353 games over his last eight seasons. It's the first game of his career in which he played more than 30 minutes, failed to score double digits, and failed to record a single block in the game. At least he does one thing, right? If he's having a bad shooting night, he's going to own it defensively and give you something on that end of the floor. It was bad on both ends. One time Jimmy Butler went, drove on him, got past AD, and then AD didn't even contest Jimmy Butler's layup. And all the while, I'm like, JJ Redick should be calling timeout and getting that guy off the floor, but he can't. Because there's two guys on the court that can be like responsible for scoring and defending on a nightly basis at a high level. And both of those guys are just mailing it in. And look, we know the issues here. JJ Redick hosted a podcast with LeBron James last year. They're really close. LeBron James, his agent and the head of Clutch Agency is Rich Paul, who got AD back when he was on the Pelicans. He left his agent, went with Rich Paul, and then engineered that trade to go over to the Lakers. There are three people, JJ Redick, LeBron, and AD, that have to get on each other. They have to hold each other accountable. And if they don't, Jeannie Buss or Rob Pelinka has to. And certainly we're seeing that nobody is willing to take responsibility. And JJ Redick can say what he wants, but clearly, like, they're all just pointing fingers at each other and hoping something changes.
I mean, look, we're what, 15 minutes into our conversation about the Lakers. It's the first time Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka get brought up. I mean, look, JJ, he's could be a fall guy after Darvin Ham was a fall guy, after Frank Vogel was a fall guy. Jeannie and Pelinka, through all of this, Lakers fans often point the finger at those two. But I think nationally, a lot of people don't point the finger at them. But the trend here is LeBron, of course. The trend is AD. But the trend is also Pelinka and Jeannie Buss. And I think if you look at this roster for JJ, maybe I did put too much blame on Darvin Ham last season. I like self-evaluating here. I think Ham screwed up a lot. I don't think he made the best of his pieces. But at the same time, you look at some of the continuing issues with the roster. Maybe there's just a fundamental roster issue here, A, with the issues we're talking about with the stars, with the limitations of LeBron at his age and of AD as a 1B, as a number two, but also the rest of this roster. And this is the challenge for that front office and for ownership. You have your own future first round draft picks that are insanely high value because of the uncertainty in the Lakers' future. But do you really want to mortgage that future on this team, on these stars? So you have all these forces kind of working against each other where Jeannie and Pelinka need to think about the post-LeBron future. JJ also needs to be bought into that as well. They hire him, hopefully, to be part of the long-term future. But then you have LeBron James and AD and Clutch and even JJ today wanting to win. So I don't know who's going to win this battle. Ultimately, I think history has shown that the Lakers are willing to sit on those picks, because they've done it in past seasons when they could have made trades. They could have made things that were helped in the short term but hurt in the long term. And I'm not feeling any certainty that they're going to actually make any big moves this year either, because what has the roster proven?
I mean, they got to make a change, though. Something, right? Something has to happen, because they had an embarrassing loss before the Heat game. You know, like,
why not like go the other way? What if the change is to go the other way? I know they don't have their own pick. They can't tank. The Hawks have their pick via the Pelicans because of the DeJounte Murray trade. They don't have their own pick. But what if you just kind of reshuffle things and go the other way? Is that the solution? Like what addition are you going to make that's going to make this Lakers team compete against the best of the best in the NBA? Is there a move out there? Is it a Zach LaVine? Does Zach LaVine put you there?
I don't think it does. I think you probably have to look at trading AD before you go and upgrade the roster, because I don't know what you're going to get. Like, it's not a matter of, hey, you got to put AD on the trade block. It's, I don't know what other move they have. The chess moves are almost done. I mean, Austin Reeves on his contract is probably Dalton Connect. Maybe you can talk yourself into, you know, getting something of high value for him. But we were just like, this is what's so maddening about the Lakers is, The most viral clip we have on this podcast is LeBron James and his triple doubles that he had. And that seems like a different season.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
We did a big number episode about how LeBron James's 3-point shot is the most impressive thing that he's done in his career, is adding a 3-point shot at age 38. And then he goes 0-for-20. This is such a ridiculously long season for the Lakers. And we haven't even gotten to Christmas. It's insane how just so much drama with this team. And I think it is as simple as they ran out of steam like 10 games in. Like, that to me is the best explanation, is that they ran out of gas 10 games in and they're already tuning out the coach.
Fanspo.com has this great NBA trade machine that allows you to, you know, trade picks and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's a really good trade machine. And on it, they have trending players being traded. If you look at the top eight players that are most frequently being traded in this trade machine, the top four are all Lakers: D'Lo, Gabe Vincent, Jalen Hood-Schifino, and Rui Hachimura. Then there's Brandon Ingram from the Pelicans, who's been involved in trade rumors. Then Jared Vanderbilt from the Lakers. And then Dorian Finney-Smith from the Nets. And then Max Lewis from the Lakers. That's your top eight most frequently traded players in the Fanspo trade machine, six of them being Los Angeles Lakers. Does anything else say more about the state of the Lakers right now than that?
How about this? Tyler Hero had 7 made threes in that third quarter, and none of them were guarded.
That says a lot, too. That does.
Like, if you watch the tape on where he was getting those threes and how open he was on those threes. This dude is the best scorer on the Heat by far. He's their number one option scoring wise. And they were losing him every time down the floor. It was unbelievable. Like Eric Reed was talking on the broadcast about how poorly he was playing. The home broadcaster was talking about how it's just not his night. Tyler Hero, just not his night. And then he goes off and catches fire. And Spo talking about how ignitable he is after the game. It is very easy to catch fire when there's just gasoline and a match right there, because that's what the Lakers were doing defensively, is just forgetting where Tyler Hero was and just letting him walk into three-pointers. The Fanspo thing, I love Fanspo because of that very thing. Great. It's just like, it's so cool to just watch. Oh, who's the number one guy who fans want to trade at this point? And the fact that it's just basically all Lakers tells you all the answer. Great find. Great pull.
You mentioned Hero going off on the Heat side of things. It's one of the first times all season we've seen Tyler Hero, Jimmy Butler, and Bam Adebayo have good games. That has not happened at all year long for Miami. Bam's had a down year following Team USA, not finishing at the rim the way he used to in the past. Butler's been super up and down, and as you mentioned, Hero inconsistent as well as the Heat leading scorer. Do you take anything positive on the Miami side of things from that Wednesday game with how well they played and it seemed like how those three stars played together? Or is that more to you about just the complete dysfunction of the Lakers allowing the Heat just to take advantage?
Well, we texted before that game being like, I think this is going to be a huge game for both of these teams. And so it does feel like a statement game by the Miami Heat, especially when it's LeBron in their building, where like everyone gets up for the LeBron games, right? And so the fact that they shot like a 70% effective field goal percentage for the entire game, a team that is so desperate for shot making, and then they have like the best shot making since, you know, playing the Boston Celtics in the playoffs a couple years ago, where it's like, oh my, like when they got it going, man, it's absurd how good that offense looks with Jimmy Butler hitting his shots. And then just running out in transition, they were so much better than the Lakers. And I know it's a low bar at running out in transition, getting back on defense. It seemed like this was a pivotal game for both teams. And I took the Miami Heat off my title tiers last week. It's been that bad. It's been that inconsistent. Bam and Jimmy, like even when they're playing, it doesn't seem like they're really hitting on the same wavelength. And just like you said, just haven't really played well, the three of them together consistently enough that I just took them off. I was like, they're not a title contender in my book anymore. And you could say the same thing about the Lakers. Like I'm thinking about putting the Heat back on that list. I am definitely taking the Lakers off.
So Lakers off of Tom's title tiers, Heat possibly back on as soon as next week on The Finder.
Every Monday.
Go check that out. Check out Tom Haberstroh's The Finder over on Substack. We'll be back in a minute. A quick reminder to listeners to send in some mailbag questions to KOCshow@yahoosports.com. All right, Tom, I mentioned the Fanspo trade machine with some of the most frequently traded players on there. One of them being Brandon Ingram from the New Orleans Pelicans. No surprise there. Sham Charania had a report earlier this week that by the deadline, he's either going to be traded or he's just going to be extended by the Pelicans. And with Ingram, no surprises there, really, considering he has an expiring contract, considering he doesn't really seem to fit on this team, considering the Pelicans just straight up stink. Of course, they're going to be exploring Ingram trades as they have been. But do you have a favorite destination in mind for Ingram if it does indeed turn out that he'll be traded?
Well, before I get to the team, it wouldn't be funny if the Lakers traded for him just through all that.
I know. Get him back. He was at his best. Get him back. I mean, at the end of his Lakers tenure, he was at his best that first year with LeBron. Ingram was really good defensively, coming along offensively. And of course, he became a most improved player with the Pelicans. But I love that version of Ingram that last year he had with the Lakers.
Yeah. And if you're the Lakers, I mean, you got a salary match. So I think D'Angelo Russell goes into that deal, but you got to put in picks if you're going to do that. So you're going to give the Pelicans even more picks to unravel the whole Anthony Davis, LeBron James problem. So that would be a great bailout.
He doesn't move the needle though. For the Lakers, he doesn't move the needle because they're 27th in defense. Ingram does not solve your issues there. You need someone who's two-way help. So Ingram is not that guy. It's got to be somebody else that's your favorite team.
Orlando. I wonder if Orlando, because of how much defensive pieces they can put around BI and the fact that they are a bottom 10 offense right now, that with Paolo Banchero coming back, maybe they can get a fully healthy Paolo Banchero to lift that offense next to Franz Wagner, Jalen Suggs, and be able to be, you know, a real contender in the East. But I don't know if you're going to get that kind of Paolo Banchero coming off the oblique injury this year. And with this kind of like flyer that Brandon Ingram's contract is, you're going to get the best version of Brandon Ingram when he comes to your team because he's playing for a contract. So I wonder if like a Duke reunion with Paolo Banchero and Brandon Ingram makes a little bit of sense because of how much they need the scoring. It's just... do you have enough defense if you're putting Brandon Ingram into your lineup? Do you have enough defense to have those three guys, Franz Wagner, Brandon Ingram, and Paolo Banchero, able to be a title, or at least in the East, a title contender? Do you think Orlando makes any sense? Because they really need the offense.
I mean, on paper, sure. Yeah, like he could add some offensive juice. But the tough thing with any Ingram deal that I'm finding when I think about, ooh, I like this team for Ingram, is the salary. He makes $36 million this year. So if you're Orlando, it's like, okay, you'll be happy to give up Cole Anthony, makes $13 million. But then it's like, okay, how do I get to 36? Do I want to give up KCP? Probably not. He's your movement shooter that you added, your defender. Do I want to give up Jonathan Isaac? No. He's one of the best defenders in the league. So it's like, I struggle to find the salaries in an Orlando trade, unless maybe you're getting some other picks back, and then maybe suddenly things make more sense. But also, Orlando's chemistry is so good. Part of me wants to just roll with what I have and just, you know, see what happens in the playoffs.
You know who's also having trouble finding a trade partner for Brandon Ingram?
New Orleans. New Orleans. Yeah, they are.
You know? For like, sure. He would have been gone by now because the season is absolutely in the tank. Zion Williamson, we find out, has got to need at least another couple weeks with his injury. So they're spinning around that toilet bowl, and you got to imagine that they're going to try to find a move here for Brandon Ingram because, you know, the report from Shams, he's going to get traded or extended. I can't imagine they're going to extend him. So that, to me, just feels like a leverage play to be like, oh, we don't need to be desperate because we actually might like this guy enough to extend him. You could have done that this offseason.
Yeah, I don't think they want to keep Ingram long term. They want to trade him. They've wanted to trade him for a long time. I would not anticipate that changes. Interesting quote this week from Ja Morant. He said to ESPN that he's done with dunking, that he clarified comments that he said post-game, how I'm not trying to dunk at all. Y'all think I'm lying. I'm dead serious. And he said to Tim McMahon, you know, sometimes I get knocked in the air and there's no foul called and I'm out longer than I'm supposed to be. Sometimes a foul will be called when I'm high up in the air and I'll still hit the floor and you can feel it. So he says that he's done with dunking, and that does show in the stats. Through his first four seasons, he had 208 dunks in 248 games, and then in the playoffs, he had 20 dunks in 19 games. Last season, his injury-shortened season, he had nine games played, only six dunks. This year, 12 games played, only four dunks. So very clearly, Ja is not going up for dunks anymore. We talked earlier this year, Tom, about the lack of dunks from a guy like Anthony Edwards, who was favoring more three-pointers. What are your takeaways on Ja's comments and then the trend of him not dunking nearly as often on the court this season?
To me, this is a great example of the NBA as a business. And Ja Morant is making a business decision. That is what's going on here with Anthony Edwards. That's what's going on here with Ja Morant, is their body is their business. And if they are not healthy, they are not selling shoes. They are not getting those sponsorships. They're not helping their team win. And I think for Ja Morant, he's making at this point a decision. I don't want to end up like Allen Iverson or Derrick Rose at the tail end of their careers is just they're not healthy enough because of all the falling and all the knick-knack injuries that are going to add up to a small guard like that. Like, that is a business decision. And that's the tough thing about today's NBA is they're balancing the entertainment with the business, load management, Ja Morant not dunking anymore, Anthony Edwards seeing his dunk rate sliced in half, which you were ahead of that story before anybody was, wait a minute. This guy's a good three-point shooter. It looks like he's a good three-point shooter, but he's doing it at the expense of attacking the rim. And Corliss Williamson had to shout him out and be like, yo, you're playing soft this year. And finally, he goes up and he dunks all over Domantas Sabonis and the Sacramento Kings. This is a business decision, and it was something that I was feeling before I wrote that story for Yahoo Sports was, you know, should we make dunks worth 3 points to incentivize guys like Ja Morant and Anthony Edwards to dunk more instead of settling for jump shots? But the problem with that is I don't think any sort of incentive structure will supersede the injury factor that you're not just seeing from guys like Ja Morant, but also guys like Chet Holmgren, who are going up and trying to block these dunks from happening and then falls on his hip and literally breaks his hip. So I think this is a really big story in the league because what Ja Morant is saying is, I'm making a business decision and the fans might not like it, but this is probably what's best for me for my entire career. And I just, it stinks. It does.
The interesting thing is, Tom, is that if you look at his numbers on cleaning the glass, it's not like Ja deciding to not dunk is affecting his at-rim chances prior to these decisions. This year, 40% of his shots are coming at the rim. The last time we saw him healthy during the 22-23 season, 40% of his shots came at the rim. It was 43% the year before that, 42% the year prior to that, and his efficiency numbers are very comparable on those shots at the rim as well. 62% this year, 62% the last time we saw him healthy, 66% the year before that. So it's not as if Ja is falling off a cliff volume or efficiency wise with his scoring at the basket. It's just he's changing the way he's finishing at the basket. It's just not as exciting for fans not to see those dunks as much, but production-wise, you got to give it to Ja for successfully adjusting.
Yeah, and it's not the only value that he's providing offensively, too. I mean, you pointed it out. I was just going to mention that, like, his at-rim numbers, the frequency, like, his ability to put pressure on the rim, it's still there, even though his dunk rate has been sliced to a fraction of what it was. But also, his passing is so good, and every time I watch him, it's just, I have to recalibrate. Oh yeah, he's one of the best passers in the league. He's not just doing it in any sort of like stylistic fashion. It's not just style. There's a lot of substance. He's making passes that, you know, peak LeBron, peak Trae Young, peak. If you put the great passers in today's NBA, he's making those passes in ways that even if he's not a high level dunker, he's still going to be a really good offensive player and a star in today's league. So I think it's a business decision. Ultimately, I think the fans want to see it, but like, remember the like 360 layups that he's been having? Like, it doesn't have to be a dunk for him to have a highlight reel. So I'm happy that he's still productive. And this isn't going to be a case where he turns into a pumpkin because he's decided he's not dunking anymore.
Be better if the shooting efficiency numbers go up at some point, but at least the at-rim stuff is sustaining and the playmaking remains absolutely outstanding. Tom, we also got some injury news this week. I mentioned on my pod earlier in the week how it sounds like Chris Middleton is going to return this week. We got news on Thursday from Bobby Marks over at ESPN that he is indeed coming back on Friday in a big game for the Bucks against the Boston Celtics. So we get Chris Middleton back for this premier matchup between the Bucks and the Celtics. How do you expect Middleton to impact the Milwaukee Bucks?
I mean, they've been secretly like one shot away from a 10-game win streak earlier, you know, before dropping that game against the Hawks.
And one badly missed call as well. They got screwed.
Screwed. And Doc Rivers let them hear it after the game. And I love that they fined Doc Rivers after the referee audit was like, yeah, Doc was right about that play. And yet still he gets fined for he did go over the top on nailing the officials. But This Milwaukee Bucks team desperately needs Chris Middleton back. He's a connector. He's a star. He does so many things for them. I'm keeping my expectations a little tempered because both ankle procedures offseason sounds like something not easy to come back from, especially with no training camp, no ability to kind of ramp up before with the guys before you have to make your debut against the Boston Celtics. But like, man, KP came back and he looked awesome for the Boston Celtics in his season debut. So I think this is great for the Bucks, obviously. But more importantly, people need to understand how good this Milwaukee Bucks team is when those three guys are on the floor. Plus 17.5 net rating every 100 possessions, which is 99th percentile in the NBA. Last year when they were together, they looked every bit the championship contender that we expected with that big three on the floor. And this isn't a case of like the Philadelphia 76ers when they get their three guys on the floor. It just looks like a jumble mess. When they had Dame, Giannis, and Middleton together, it was awesome. And I got to say, in this like 20-game sample of the season, the Bucks are getting Chris Middleton back and Dari Bird is awesome, dude. That is the number one jump shooter in the NBA. According to Synergy Sports, his jump shot efficiency is 70% effective field goal percentage on his jump shots. They are 9-4 when Dari Bird, I'm talking about AJ Green, great nickname, maybe the best nickname in the NBA. They're 9-4 when AJ Green plays at least 20 minutes and 2-6 when he doesn't. So you get Chris Middleton back with AJ Green, who needs to get 25, 30 minutes a night. This Milwaukee Bucks team is getting healthier and getting sharper and better right in time for Christmas when they're not playing and for the long haul this season. I'm buying a lot of stock on the Bucks.
I had a great conversation with Dan Titus earlier in the week on my show about I feel higher on them after this recent stretch than he does. I know they dropped their game to the Hawks on Wednesday, but those are the types of games where it feels like Middleton makes a big impact. And you said it, AJ Green taking Pat Connaughton's minutes, Andre Jackson playing more consistently. Now you get Chris Middleton back, who has always been critical to their success in the postseason, always been an important player during the regular season. And Giannis and Dame starting to click more together. Giannis putting up MVP level numbers, Dame finding his role next to Giannis, moving more, playmaking more. I feel like Chris Middleton's coming back at the perfect moment. And I look forward to this perfect barometer test on Friday night against the Boston Celtics, because who else better to face to figure out who you really are and where you stand in the East than the Celtics. So I'm excited for that one. Tom, thank you for joining me today, man.
Yeah, it's great. Pumped up, Jack, to be here as always. And look, I think that game's going to be awesome. I can't wait to see how, you know, we need guys back like Chris Middleton. The NBA has had a really big injury problem this season, and finally getting Chris Middleton back to make that Bucks team whole. I'm excited. This is going to be a great weekend of hoops.
Thanks for joining me today. It's Tom Haverstraw. Thanks to John for producing. And thanks to you for giving us a listen. Please subscribe to The Kevin O'Connor Show if you have not done so already. Give us a 5-star rating as well. It really does help out the show. Hope you have a great weekend.